Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On today's show, we continue our coverage of Pride Month by speaking with two LGBTQ plus activists to discuss what they are celebrating, how they're fighting back against Republican-led attacks on the LGBTQ plus community, and the issues that are most important to them this election year. What questions would they like to hear at tonight's presidential debate? We're joined today by Fred Hertz, a longtime LGBTQ plus activist, attorney, and author of several books, including Legal Affairs, Essential Advice for Same-Sex Couples, and Making It Legal, A Guide to Same-Sex Marriage, Domestic Partnerships, and Civil Unions. Hi, Fred. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thanks for your interest in our topic.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Fabiana Ungara, a 21-year-old lesbian and first-generation Peruvian immigrant studying at the University of Central Florida. Fabiana works at the PRISM Student Ambassador Program, a program dedicated to providing resources for LGBTQ plus student leaders in high schools and colleges across South Florida. She is their PRISM Student Ambassador Program Manager. PRISM advocates for LGBTQ plus inclusive education and sexual health resources at the local level. Hi, Fabiana. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me in this space.
Well, it's great to have both of you. Fred, we had you on almost exactly a year ago during Pride Month to talk about these issues. So much has happened over the past year. Before we dive in and talk about how you're all responding to what we're seeing across the country from GOP legislators, let's start on a positive note. Fred, what are you celebrating this year? And what is happening out there that you'd like us to know about that maybe is not getting the attention it deserves?
Well, I think what needs to get attention is how much progress there has been in the last 50 years. People forget that 50 years ago, homosexual conduct was still illegal in California. It was only decriminalized in 1975. Private contracts between same-sex couples generally were not even enforced when they were signed, even with a lawyer, because they were seen as promoting immoral conduct. And the biggest issue facing lesbians was the loss of their children that they may have had with a heterosexual partner if they got divorced from that partner. So what I think we need to celebrate, and I hope it's comfort to the people who are younger than me who are fighting, is that we actually have made enormous progress. And while there are problems now, the problems really, and maybe I'll get in trouble for saying this, they are relatively less catastrophic than the problems we were facing 50 years ago. We were facing prison. We were facing murders. We were facing total social exclusion. So I hope we can fight these current fights with that positive history in mind.
Fabiana, as a young LGBTQ activist, what are your thoughts about what Fred just laid out there?
I loved the reminder on the progress that we've made. I think it's definitely important to stay positive and celebrate our wins when we can, where we can, in this realm of work. There's definitely still a lot to fight for. On my mind today is Florida's gender-affirming care ban that was recently overturned. So that's something I'm celebrating. It was overturned earlier this month. But yeah, like Fred said, it's important to remember how far we've come.
On this issue, I think this is important to talk about. There's just so much going on right now. So to focus on what you just said, Alexandra Martinez at PRISM Reports, this is a separate PRISM, they do great work. She's got a piece out and it says, in a landmark decision celebrated by advocates and healthcare providers alike, a federal judge in Florida blocked Senate Bill 254, legislation that severely restricted access to gender-affirming care across the state. So as you said, Fabiana, people are celebrating that in Florida. What else are you hearing from young LGBTQ activists and just everyday people trying to live their lives without all of these laws, you know, trying to control their bodies and their lives. What are you hearing from people about what they are celebrating? What is going on right now that you think deserves more attention?
Well, you know, to expand a little bit on the ban that was overturned, it was on the basis of parental rights. So they said that the law actually overstepped on parental rights, and that it was sort of a decision that's best to be made, you know, among families and that kind of thing. So in terms of youth specifically, in response to this ban overturned, I know a lot of the youth in the program that I work in were relieved. You know, a lot of us have decided to stay here and fight for our state. So hearing that, you know, that this was protected was huge. And another recent win that we've had in Florida is the Don't Say Gay settlement, which conservatives actually viewed this as a celebratory win as well, because it meant that Don't Say Gay was still in effect. But what it meant for us was that there was clarity on a bill that was so vague on purpose to confuse us. You know, so organizations like GSAs knew that they had protection, that they were allowed to exist and to, you know, help the school climate where they can. So that's another one we've had recently where, you know, technically, I guess from a certain perspective, it could be celebrated as it could be viewed as a loss because Don't Say Gay is still in effect. It gives us a little bit more guidelines on what we can and can't do and, you know, gives us more room to plan. So that's a little bit of what we've seen.
And NPR had a piece about the Don't Say Gay law. They report that under the terms of the settlement, the Florida Board of Education will send instructions to every school district saying the Florida law does not prohibit discussing LGBTQ plus people, nor prevent anti-bullying rules on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity, or disallow gay-straight alliance groups. So can you talk more about how educators and people in Florida are responding to this, given that it got so much attention and a number of people said that other conservative states were going to follow through or have copycat bills?
Yeah. Florida's Don't Say Gay was definitely an inspiration for a lot of other anti-LGBTQ plus bills in our nation. But the reason why this is so big for us, and especially this year, so we do a lot of work on the local level, as I mentioned. So part of that last year was speaking at the Miami-Dade County School Board meeting in support of LGBTQ plus History Month being recognized. And in the previous years, it had passed no problem. But, you know, Don't Say Gay was passed. And then there's all this rhetoric going on how this could be considered grooming or brainwashing. So we spoke at a school board meeting and we urged the school board members to recognize LGBTQ plus History Month, and it wasn't passed. It was voted against in a majority. And this was the first year that happened. So we, you know, now that this settlement has passed, this year we're mobilizing again to speak in support of the same thing for the school board to recognize LGBTQ plus History Month. And we'll have this to reference. And a lot of times at these school board meetings, the question is proposed, like, why is this so important? You know, why does this really matter? But it influences the school's climate, and it influences how students feel in their schools. You know, to have something by the school board saying, yes, LGBTQ plus History Month is important. You know, the school board isn't necessarily dispersing materials to teachers and saying, here, teach this. But they're saying, you know, it's okay for students to talk about this. And for students to have that is a big thing, because it results in students feeling like less othered, you know, less singled out, and less targeted.
That is Fabiana Ungaro, the PRISM Student Ambassador Program Manager. This is a program dedicated to providing resources for LGBTQ plus student leaders in high schools and colleges across South Florida. And we know that so much is going on in Florida and other conservative-led states around these issues. We're also joined by Fred Hertz, a longtime LGBTQ plus activist and attorney, author of many books. You can find out more about Fred and Fabiana's work at yourcallradio.org. If you'd like to join today's conversation, what are your thoughts about where we are? This is Pride Month. We're speaking with two activists having an intergenerational conversation about what they're celebrating, how they're fighting back against these GOP-led attacks, and then the issues that are most important to them. And we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Fred, how long have you been doing this activism?
I think my first protest was 1976. I lived in Austin, Texas.
Oh, wow.
And the most important thing we did then is protest Anita Bryant, who was leading this campaign against gay people being teachers or being parents. So it was 1976. And one of the things I want to bring into this conversation, which is uncomfortable for a lot of people, is that for at least the first 20 years, from the 60s to the 80s and 90s, trans people were not part of this movement. There really was a complete split between what was considered same-sex love, the right to have homosexual sex, the right to live with a homosexual partner, and what we would now call gender identity. They really were not seen as the same battle. And there were these amazing trailblazers. I first encountered Ricky Wilkins, who basically, she said, you know, our fight is your fight. That took a long time to evolve. And apropos to what's happening now, I think if you look at, for example, whether it's Pete Buttigieg or other very happily out gay men or successful lesbians, you really have a split in how, what I would say, sort of mainstreamed, sort of socially conventional same-sex couples are treated with marriage rights, with jobs, and how people with less conventional gender identity, people who are adolescent, people who are looking for trans rights or gender-affirming surgery, I think that there really is a split in this country in terms of who is the target now as opposed to who was the target 30 years ago. So we really were fighting for, as I said, decriminalization of sodomy laws, the right to have children. I have to just say one funny thing about 1976, and this really tells it all. This was in an era when population control and population boom and excess impact of people on the planet was seen as a negative thing. Some of us carried posters that said 2468, we don't overpopulate. This shows saying how detached we were even from child rearing in a gay rights movement.
How do you see this moment, given all of the work that you've done over the past five decades? I mean, here are three facts that are just very important. This is from the 19th last August. House Republicans have embedded at least 45 anti-LGBTQ plus provisions into must-pass funding bills. This is from the AP this February. Donald Trump has mocked transgender people during his campaign. Right. Last December, HuffPost. This year was marked by rising anti-trans rhetoric. A record number of anti-LGBTQ bills filed in GOP state houses across the country. And also, this has consequences because Common Dreams in March, school hate crimes quadruple in GOP states attacking LGBTQ plus rights. So how do you see this moment, Fred?
Well, one is we have to face the truth that these political achievements are not like one-time victories and then you can go on with your daily life. I think many of us have this myth that once we achieved these benchmark decriminalization, marriage equality, et cetera, once we achieved those, we could shut down. We were done. We would never have to fight these battles again. And I think we see now how untrue that is and how much these struggles have to continue, which is why I'm so impressed with people like Fabiano who are out there fighting. The second thing is, which is, again, a difficult legal strategy, we made a decision, many of us, the people running Lambda and NCLR, that if we could win legal victories, i.e. marriage, decriminalization in the legislatures or in the courts, we didn't need to do grassroots fighting with school boards, with our neighbors, with our parents. And that strategy of winning legal victories or legislative victories has carried within it the seeds of its own weakness, which is what's happening now, where individuals, whether they be in Congress or in a school board, are acting out of the same bias and hatred that we experienced 50 years ago. But they, you know, we convincing a court or a legislator doesn't mean changing public opinion. So I guess that's where I would see the need to shift into these public activist strategies, which have been now so effective.
Fabiana, as a 21-year-old activist, how do you see this moment? How do you and your friends deal with all of these headlines, especially the ones I just mentioned?
You know, it's really interesting hearing Frank talk about his experience, his experience in the activism realm. For me, when I stepped into it, it was really clear from the beginning that it wasn't just going to be one fight. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I would argue since I stepped foot in this country, it was really clear that it wasn't just going to be one fight. You know, the same strategies that have been used against trans people, against gay people, have been used against minorities in general in this nation for a very, very long time. So part of, I think, what helps my friends and I, who, you know, we all work across different initiatives. It's not, you know, just LGBTQ plus rights. You know, we're also working to support immigrant rights and that kind of thing, is to remember that we're a collective and we're fighting together. That's always kind of been what's kept us going, is that all these organizations here, you know, we all try to help each other out where we can. If one of us is mobilizing for something, you know, we'll try to bring our people to that. And if we're mobilizing for something, they'll bring their people. So I guess I would say kind of sharing the fight is what has kept us going here. Because it's not just one thing for us.
Can you tell us more about PRISM and what you're all doing there in South Florida?
Yes, of course. So we started as a GSA, actually, in South Florida. We noticed that there was a lack of support for GSAs. Just overall, like, school administration, you know, can sometimes be a barrier. They're, you know, they don't really support having a GSA, or sometimes it can even be the sponsors. You know, teachers don't receive adequate training sometimes here for what it takes to, like, lead a sort of organization like this. And just, you know, different hurdles. But what we do is we step in and we give GSAs tools and sort of support system to kind of help them and guide them through what it means to be like an LGBTQ plus organization in a state like this. You know, help them get through to their school administration, help them get involved in advocacy if that's what they need, or just help them keep their GSA running. If you know, if that's all they're trying to do, it's different for every student. Another result of everything that's happened in our state is a lot of people kind of had to take a step back from advocacy because of, you know, the dangers they felt they were facing, or the toll it took on their mental health. A lot of students, you know, kind of had to take care of themselves and say, you know, right now I don't feel comfortable being in this like outspoken position. And a lot of that is a result of them being targeted in their schools there was a student whose GSA club table was like destroyed. They had their table out during lunch, and some students like went and threw food and stuff on it and just completely like teared down the table, teared down the flag that was on it, everything. And you know, these are the kind of things that just create a culture of fear. So a lot of what we've been doing in the past year has been helping GSAs stay active where they can and how they can, and kind of meet them where they're at and what sort of support they need, because every school and district is different. That's a little bit of what we've been doing.
This is so important. Where can LGBTQ youth go for support when these things happen? The Washington Post had a piece in March. In states with laws targeting LGBTQ issues, school hate crimes quadrupled. And the comments from students are just so horrific. My government hates me. My school hates me. They don't want me to exist. I mean, and people in the article said, well, this is the end result of these horrific anti-LGBTQ plus bills and the rhetoric that we're hearing from people like Donald Trump and others. So what sort of resources are available for these students who do not feel safe being open in school?
Yeah, it's really hard, and it's something that a lot of organizations are still trying to work out and figure out how they can support each individual in the different ways they need. Social media has become a really big safe space and, you know, place of community almost for people who feel like they can't be out publicly. You know, they can have like online friends and have these like social media groups where they can converse. And social media is another thing that's being targeted in our state. It's a big tool. It's something we use to help organize and educate each other on what's going on. You know, it's a way we communicate. And in the past legislative session, there was actually a bill proposed to ban the use of social media for minors. And, you know, this, you know, you could argue is also an overstep of parental rights. Social media has been one of the ways. Another one of the ways is just community spaces where they can access it. You know, if GSAs are inaccessible to them, organizations such as, you know, PRISM or a multitude of others that have grown in South Florida that, you know, provide services and physical spaces that students can go to outside of school. To have like support groups and that kind of thing has been something really growing down here too. But it's still, I would say it's still a work in progress to kind of adjust to the opposition and learning new ways we can support each other in this kind of new world, I would say.
Right. And
you know, it's interesting about,
go ahead, Fred.
Hearing this, one is that there were not a lot of high school age activists in my era. So in that sense, the people who were fighting were older. And I think it was easier for us than it would have been. And I'm extraordinarily impressed with, you know, knowing about high school activists because it just didn't exist. The other was that it was a time and Fabiana spoke wisely about sharing and alliances. You know, late 60s and early 70s, you know, we weren't the only ones out on the street. You know, it was a very big anti-war movement. The Black Liberation Movement was really getting started. The women's movement was just really getting started. And so if you were a young activist where, you know, whether you had hate mail coming into your mailbox, a conventional mailbox, not a social media one, whether you had a fear of being beaten up at a demonstration in a street, you were not alone in this. And whether it was on a college campus or in Minneapolis or in Austin or New York or San Francisco, there were large crowds of people fighting for their political rights. And so there was a sense of comradeship, I think. And I would also say there wasn't an expectation of safety. When I hear Fabiano talking about the things that people suffered, you know, that seemed just totally ordinary. And if you're a 25-year-old activist with women friends, with African-American friends who are fighting, you expected that kind of reaction. And since you were fighting to change society, you were ready for it. And we didn't have older mentors. In fact, many of the older gay activists were appalled at the kinds of things that many of us did because we were so out there. So I'd say we accepted the challenges, and many of us were older, and maybe that was easier for us.
Fred, I wonder what your thoughts are about how you think the media should deal with these issues. Because again, what these politicians say, it has consequences. This legislation has consequences. The Washington Post reports calls have spiked to the Trevor Project, which provides support to LGBTQ plus youth aimed at suicide prevention and crisis intervention. In the fiscal year ending July 2022, the group fielded 230 crisis contacts, including phone calls, texts, and online chats. The following year, it was more than 500,000. How do you think major media should deal with this, given what's at stake here?
Well, the first is to understand the personal consequences, that this is not just a theoretical political fight. And as you say, the examples you give, and there are many of them, these battles really have personal consequences. And when I watch how the reaction to the Dobbs decision and divorce and abortion has come out, one of the most important things is telling the stories of individuals who've had medical problems or who've lost their jobs or who've had to travel cross country. So the first is to make it personal. The other is the extent to which many of those attacking our community actually don't have the kind of personal animus that we saw 50 years ago. But in fact, they are using us for their own political opportunism. I'm sure that 20 years ago, when Trump and his friends were going to parties and theater and concerts and gatherings in New York City, they had many gay friends. And they are adopting an anti-LGBT perspective for their own political gain. And I think seeing how that works is really important. And then the third is to actually celebrate the alternative lives that people are taking, so that the demonization of trans people or people seeking gender-affirming care, that demonization is confronted. So doing that kind of work, I think, is so important.
Fred Hertz is a longtime LGBTQ plus activist, attorney, and author of many books, including Legal Affairs, Essential Advice for Same-Sex Couples. Fabiana Ungaro is a 21-year-old first-generation Peruvian immigrant studying at the University of Central Florida. Fabiana works as the PRISM Student Ambassador Program Manager. It's dedicated to providing resources for LGBTQ plus student leaders in high schools and colleges across South Florida. In our remaining minutes, I wonder what you both would like to hear at tonight's debate. And I also just want to mention that there is a lot of information about what could possibly happen in a second Trump term. I'm reading right now from the Louisiana Illuminator, June 16th. LGBTQ plus advocates are gearing up for a possible second Trump administration by planning future litigation. If Donald Trump is reelected, advocacy groups expect him to enact anti-LGBTQ plus policies that are far more reaching and extreme than those he put in place during his first term. And this is based on Project 2025. This was written by the Heritage Foundation. We're going to start doing a weekly series on Project 2025 starting next Wednesday. Trump is specifically focused on rolling back trans rights. His proposals would terminate Medicare and Medicaid funding for hospitals that provide gender-affirming care. He's going to attempt to charge teachers with sex discrimination for affirming students' gender identities and forcing federal agencies to cease all programs that promote the concept of sex and gender transition at any age. That's in quotes. So, Fabiana, what would you like tonight's moderators to ask Joe Biden and Donald Trump?
A lot. I would love to hear how they plan to protect women's rights. I would love to hear how they plan to protect access to life-saving healthcare for trans people. How they plan to help immigrants in the process of obtaining citizenship, but also granting refuge to those who are in occupied territories right now. Everything. There's so much to fight for. There's so much to talk about, to discuss, and so much that deserves to be heard right now.
What does the activism look like where you are in South Florida around educating people about the election and getting out the vote?
So we work a lot with organizations that do like door-to-door kind of interactions, like helping campaign for a certain campaign for a certain politician. So that's part of what we do. And the other part of what we do is sharing information as often as we can through our different social media channels on how, you know, our community in specific would be affected by certain issues. Just maintaining a tight network of communication between the different organizations and then also the people that look to us for information.
Fred, what about you? What questions would you like to see asked at tonight's debate?
Well, the first thing would be to emphasize, as Fabiana said, how much damage a president can do or how much good a president can do. Biden just ordered the military to reverse the convictions of military members of the military who were convicted of same-sex conduct. A president can make changes to Medicare, to Medicaid, as we saw, and set all sorts of policy. And obviously, a president can appoint lots of justices and judges. So what I would want the question to be, both to Biden to say, what have you accomplished and what do you plan to do next? And to Trump, I think it really has to be, how can you align yourself with such hate? How can you support such hate so that hopefully more moderate Republicans who are listening to him will see how dangerous he is? And those who feel that Biden may not have done enough or he may not be perfect on every issue will get out to vote for him. We don't want to have a repeat of what happened in 2016, where Hillary Clinton was seen as imperfect, and thus we were stuck with Trump. So help people to see what these candidates are really going to do so that hopefully they will make the right choice when they go to vote.
Fred Hertz is a longtime LGBTQ plus activist, attorney, and author of several books, including Making It Legal, A Guide to Same-Sex Marriage, Domestic Partnerships, and Civil Unions. Fabiana Ungaro is a first-generation Peruvian immigrant studying at the University of Central Florida. She works as the PRISM Student Ambassador Program Manager. They're dedicated to providing resources for LGBTQ plus student leaders in high schools and colleges across South Florida. Fred and Fabiana, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for asking such good questions. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And enjoy this weekend's events if you're going to be out there celebrating. Thank you so much. And if you're listening to Your Call on KALW, be sure to tune in tonight at 6 p.m. to hear the presidential debate. It'll run from 6 to 7:30. Then we will offer an hour of analysis and we will take your calls. We hope you can tune in. Coming up after a short break, we will talk about whether the climate crisis will get enough attention in tonight's debate. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.